Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Practically perfect ophthalmology tips. Boy, I wish I had these when I came out of vet school, because sometimes it can be a little confusing and a little overwhelming. And joining us is our wonderful colleague and friend, Dr. Kenneth Pierce in the house. How's it going, my friend?
Doing good. Great to be here.
Good to see you as always. And just a fun fact to those of you tuning in is, I was just talking to him before offline, is I referred cases to you when I was in GP full-time practicing. And it's just so interesting how things go full circle now, right? Yeah. Here we are. I just, never put really a name with a face because I'm always seeing on the referral forms. I'm like, how much did I screw up sending this case on over? But I learned so much from you. So thank you for all you do.
Oh, yeah. You're very welcome.
Thank you. So a little information about our wonderful colleague here, Dr. Kenneth Pierce. Pierce is a native, or you know what? Is it Orleanian?
New Orleanian. Yep.
New Orleanian. Okay. I'm from Jersey. Everything I say has an accent. Received his undergrad degree from Tuskegee University and DVM from LSU School of Vet Med. Go. What's the mascot?
Tigers.
There it is. He completed a small animal medicine and surgery internship at the University of Tennessee and then traveled to SoCal to complete a specialty ophthalmology internship with iCare for Animals, and then completed the four-year comparative ophthalmology residency with a master's degree at Michigan State University. Dr. Pierce started an associate professor at LSU School of Veterinary Medicine and then transitioned to private practice from where I know him, which was at Garden State Veterinary Specialist in Tinton Falls, New Jersey, and then the Veterinary Eye Institute in Plano, Texas, and then started his own business, Veterinary Vision Center in Shreveport, Louisiana. After experiencing and working in an underserved area with limited access to veterinary specialty care, Dr. Pierce started Vespicom, a veterinary specialist to primary veterinary advisory support, concierge referral service, and more, which we're going to chat about. And as you can see, he's lived the life of many regions of the United States and gained valuable experience to educate and empower the veterinary community. But wait, hold up. I don't know if you like baseball.
Football more than baseball.
How do you get to pick? Because you've been to so many schools.
Yeah. So you got to keep it to the home team, right? So the Saints, yeah, definitely for the NFL. Anything SEC is going to be LSU. And then, when I was at Michigan State, anything in the Big Ten is Michigan State, right? So those are my teams of allegiance, I would say. But if it's Big Ten against SEC, then the SEC is going to win out.
Yeah, it's tough to balance them all out. My gosh.
Yeah.
And I got to ask you, what made you become a veterinary ophthalmologist?
Yeah, so I knew going into vet school that I wanted to specialize there. And initially, I was between cardiology and neurology. And at LSU at the time, the opto and neuro class were actually combined. And so having an interest in neurology and then this totally new language of ophthalmology and the entire disease process, like I took to it immediately and then started to consider, the quality of life as an ophthalmologist, the variety of species that we deal with, the medicine and microsurgery that, is done. So I was like, oh yeah, this is where I want to be and all. So pursued networking opportunities, externships and things like that with other ophthalmologists. And that just further solidified the deal. So,
wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. The rest is history. And here you are. Yeah.
So keep your options open for those that are listening to this. If you have a little bit of interest in, don't put up major walls around yourself. You never know what opportunities will come to you.
Networking and good mentors always seem to, right?
Really 100%. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, as you'll learn, if you don't know already, the veterinary community is small. So knowing folks who know folks can definitely, help steer you in the right direction and such.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's talk about one of the most common conditions that we see as primary care veterinarians, and that's cataracts, without a doubt. Sometimes you can get a little overwhelming. Sometimes you get it confused with nuclear or lenticular sclerosis. So what are some, best clinical management strategies GPs can implement for patients developing cataracts?
Yeah. So the very first thing is take the time to dilate them, right? Obviously, we're getting busy in our day and we're looking at this eye, but, have your nursing team be able to evaluate the initial diagnostic test for eye exam and get them dilated right away. As long as the pressure isn't elevated, And they have normal PLRs. You should be able to dilate anybody and everybody. And then after that 15 minutes of dilation with tropicamide, then go back in and take a look with your either transilluminator or whatever light source that you have from a distance as well as up close. So from a distance, when you're trying to differentiate nuclear sclerosis from cataracts, you should get the torpedo reflection through the eye. The nuclear sclerosis is going to dull it down just a little bit in the center, so it's going to look like a dull pearl, but you still get that reflection through it as well as a brighter reflection around it. Anything that is a cataract from a distance is going to block that reflection, so it's actually going to look like a black spot amongst the reflection. When you get close, and this is where a lot of GPs get tripped up, especially when they don't dilate the pupil, is that when you shine the light closer to the eye there, that nuclear sclerosis scatters light, which is why people as well as animals have difficulties with seeing, when it's super bright. So it's going to scatter light, it's going to make the lens turn more white, which is actually going to look more like a cataract. And so that is why there's a little bit of people get tripped up and say, oh, your pet has cataracts, when sometimes you get the report back and you're like, it's just nuclear sclerosis and there is no cataract there. So take the time to dilate. Then if you do identify cataracts, it's worth, just like you do for your PCP, once you've identified a problem, get them to an ophthalmologist just in general, right? So the ophthalmologist can give the owner options. Depending on the location and how the cataract looks and things like that, there's information that we could tell them as far as if this cataract at that location is likely to progress or not, what the etiology is, if there's things that we need to kind of implement to prevent it from getting worse or to address whatever the underlying cause is that's caused it in the first place. And then definitely if you've identified cataract along with an IOP drop. And so let's say in the affected eye, the pressure is like 7, but in the non-affected eye, the pressure is like 17 where it should be. That's a drastic difference between the two eyes, and there should only be just a 5 millimeter of mercury difference between the eyes. So that lower IOP can be an indication of lens-induced uveitis. And in that situation, you will want to start some form of topical anti-inflammatory. So kind of keeping those things in mind, but definitely, when you do refer a case to an ophthalmologist, you're not losing that client. You're just basically giving them the additional information that they need to be informed on what's going to happen to that eye over time.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you for that. I feel
Yeah.
like pet parents really want to put something in the eye when they hear like a cataract. Like, is there something I can do? As I, unless you're not a phaco
Yeah.
But is there anything in addition? I'm ruling out things such as uveitis, like you're talking about. But let's just say general cataracts, because I know that there are some things that are out there that we see. But I don't know if the evidence supports it enough to kind of help manage, say, cataracts. Is there anything that you can think of?
Yeah, so currently, from a therapeutic standpoint, there isn't a specific medication or drop or whatever to 100% stop the progression of cataracts or what have you. There's definitely supplements like Ocuglow, for example, that has kind of antioxidants or lens-specific things, for lack of a better word, that will help with, ocular health and lens health, but it doesn't stop the progression of cataract. Obviously, the majority of cataracts that dogs and cats do get are inherited from an origin basis. So at least identifying that and then knowing from some of those, again, even though it's inherited, they may just have a small little speck and it stays that way for, 10 years of their life, or until something else happens, and then it changes because something else happened, not necessarily because of their genetic progression. So, but from a therapeutic standpoint, at least at the present moment, I would continue routine checks of that dilated exam. So, at a minimum, every 6 months, or if you think it's progressing sooner or quicker, then quarterly, if not more frequent, and then, depending on how much vision or how much cataract involvement it is, how much visual deficits there are, will kind of dictate as far as how quickly you need to get them into the ophthalmologist or not, or if cataract surgery is going to be needed sooner or later.
Okay, great. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, Doc.
Yeah.
All right. Another practically perfect ophthalmology tip is in the world of corneal ulcers, something that we see every day in and day
Yes.
out. What are the main therapeutic categories veterinarians should consider when implementing or treating corneal ulcers?
Yeah, so I try to, keep everything simple, right? Because again, you're dealing with a lot on a daily basis. So let's keep it down strictly to what's 100% necessary. And that's usually, typically there's an infection going on, or we at least assume that there is. If not, sometimes it's just the immune system that is overactive. So there's an inflammatory component with every ulcer there. And then addressing whatever the underlying cause was. So your antibiotics there, obviously, if you're seeing kind of white to yellow material within the corneal stroma, that would scream, hey, let's get a sample of that. Get a cytology, see what's there. See what if it's rods. Or I was about to say rods and cones. See if it's
You're such an
rods or cocci. See
ophthalmologist.
if there's rods or cocci, or in some cases there's even fungus, which is rare in our small animal patients. But if you're looking at horses, there's definitely fungus among us all the time there. If you got tons of neutrophils there, right? That is screaming. This cornea is wickedly inflamed. It may even be on the potential scale of starting to melt. So get that sample. Don't be afraid to numb the cornea as well as touch it with a cytology brush, a cotton swab, the back of a scalpel blade. But get that information. Don't lose that opportunity to learn more, and that will help steer your antibiotic of choice. The other aspect of it is sometimes you might need two different antibiotics, right? You might need to hit it from multiple spectrums. There, it's not uncommon that they could have multiple organisms in a corneal ulcer there. So don't be afraid sometimes to have a second antibiotic and something that also does some gives you some properties that the first one doesn't. For example, like terramycin, not only is it an antibiotic, but it also has some anti-collagenolytic properties too. So it will help melting there. Or we like to use terramycin with our indolent ulcers because it also has properties to improve the epithelial adhesion to the corneal stroma in those types of ulcers there. Anti-inflammatory. So this is one of my soapbox. I would say some of the, in the literature, there's a few reports of topical steroid, excuse me, topical non-steroidals potentiating a melting situation or delaying wound healing. Now, and depending on what camp you are, there's a camp ophthalmologist where, NSAIDs are all good and never issue, and then there's others that are swear by never put an NSAID on a corneal ulcer and such. I would tell you, I'm in that first camp. There's not an ulcer that doesn't that I see that I treat that does not leave without a topical NSAID. And that is because not only I know that there's inflammation there and it's an anti-inflammatory, but the patients that I've seen and witnessed by others that have gone home without a topical NSAID are significantly uncomfortable, even if they've been on an oral pain medication or anti-inflammatory. You give them a drop of the topical NSAID, and like the next day, they'll be so much more comfortable and have that eye so much more open there. So and I, knock on wood, have yet to have one that was melting because of a NSAID by itself, or that was the culprit, as well as the delayed wound healing. I think from a clinical standpoint, it's not as big of a deal as it makes it out from a research standpoint. Kind of petri dishes and cell migration. Yeah, it may slow it down, but you've also got other factors in there that's also preventing the ulcer from healing. The other thing is to also kind of titrate the frequencies too, right? And then obviously the last thing, like I mentioned, addressing the underlying cause. Sometimes it's hard to decipher from the owner's history or what have you, what may have caused the ulcer in the first place. So a lot of it may rely on just your thorough ophthalmic exam and what you may think. KCS is huge, eyelid or contact to the cornea, whether it's a mechanical irritation or something as a problem. So I would go on that hunt, spend that time, really try to address it. And if you don't know, then implement what may be important, right? Additional lubricant, some other form of pain management, or just treat the ulcer and then reassess once it's all healed. Don't just treat the ulcer and then see that patient 6 months later. After it's healed up in 2 weeks or what have you, like see them 2 to 3 weeks later when everything is back to normal and see what's going on, if that underlying problem is still there or not.
Yeah, really helpful. I was always like a picture kind of guy that I would have on my phone because I sometimes feel like some pet owners would feel like it's not getting better. But then to me, I was like, oh, it looks better. I have to go back to my phone just to see what it looked like initially. Because sometimes
Yeah.
they can go south quickly, as you know, right? So,
Yeah, very much so. And pictures, that's a good point. Pictures make a thousand words. Like I would,
yeah.
even on your normal wellness or whatever, get a picture of the eyes, right? Because that's good reference information for you for when that eye comes back, that's bad, right?
Right.
To look back at. So
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, certain dog breeds. Okay, French Bulldog, Pug, Shih Tzu. Okay.
we just gonna name a few.
No, we're not gonna name drop them. We're not gonna name drop them. Okay, and our other one that we see, sometimes we'll see them on emergencies, of course, in the ophthalmology world. We'll see certain ocular emergencies that can happen. So what are some of those and that get overlooked and that can be seen right away and maybe they need to see you right away?
Yeah, so some of the ones that I've seen, at least most recently, that probably should have seen an ophthalmologist sooner than later is like the corneal laceration that got scratched. That is questionable if it's full thickness or not. Definitely the animal was uncomfortable. There's this kind of curvilinear edematous lesion on the cornea. It takes up stain. It looks like an ulcer, but we don't know for sure if it is fully leaking or if it's actively leaking or if it's just edematous so much that it's sealed itself or it's got a bunch of fibrin in there. And so any corneal laceration in itself is definitely worth getting referred on an emergency basis. Even if it's stable, it's worth having an ophthalmologist evaluate it and check and see, because a lot of those the eye, is great at trying to plug a hole. So it will plug it. It will create a big fibrin plug. If not, the iris is going to come forward and try to seal it or what have you. But that might not be the best thing for the eye, as well as that immediate comfort for that animal is going to be uncomfortable until that fibrin plug is remodeled and is scarred and so forth. And that's going to take several weeks there. So it might need more surgical intervention immediate. The other one is a glaucoma, right? You've diagnosed glaucoma, and the affected eye, the animal's still visual in the other eye. It may not be visual in that eye that you diagnosed that glaucoma at the time because of the pressure, but that is one where it needs to go and see an ophthalmologist immediately, right? If there's any chance, any hope of restoring vision in that eye, we're in the business of addressing that. And even though glaucoma, a lot of glaucoma happens without the owner noticing as well as without the veterinarian noticing. So sometimes when you get it, when you see it, the damage is already done there. But in those situations, there are some instances where the owner picks up on it acutely, or it is truly an acute glaucoma, and the eye is still visual at the time that you have diagnosed it. Having that owner come back a week or two later and starting it on, a dorzolamide twice a day, and there's no prostaglandin in addition to it, or something like that, we're going to lose that race. Glaucoma is like a race against time. So I wouldn't sit on those, send them right away. Like that same day or the following morning, or have you. Last ones I would say is also like a ulcer, a melting ulcer there. If you think it's more than 50% depth, or the cornea looks like it's not like coming off of it, it's losing its integrity, it is melasic there. If you are going to hold on to it, and if you don't have 24-hour care of over the around the clock overnight care for that patient, see it the next day. If it is worse, like don't sit, send it. Like the sooner those corneas can get stable, then the better chances the animal can still have an eye and still be visual there. But some ulcers, no matter what you do, will lead to a perforation or what have you. Some infections that they develop are really, really nasty. But the vast majority, even though the eye may look like who did it and when, can be turned around, and that animal still potentially can, be sighted out of it. It just needs kind of immediate intervention.
Great, awesome. So helpful. And it got me thinking as you're talking about these things. I said, gosh, it would be so great when you're going through these cases to have like an ophthalmologist side by side with me, because it's one thing, I'm sure, like you get text messages and pictures sent of eyeballs and all that. But now we have something that's really cool that we can kind of partner together with, where we can kind of shoulder up when we're talking about access to care. We have something called Vespicon now that's around, so which I'm really excited to learn more. So share with us about that and how that works.
Yeah, so Vespicon is pretty much a company that built that is all web-based, so it's nothing that individuals or hospitals need to kind of convert to or implement there. But it is basically you as a veterinarian, your network of specialists of all fields for large, small, and exotic. So any and every specialty under the sun, where you have a more personal conversation with the specialist or multiple specialists at a time to basically make you the acting specialist locally. You get all of the knowledge and the information that you need to help do whatever needs to be done there in hospital to resolve that patient of its problems if we can, or to help get it to a better state until it needs to go to said specialty hospital for a specialty diagnostic or procedure there. But the ultimate goal is, we all have our internal medicine friend or our surgeon friend, but when do we always have an oncologist and an ophthalmologist and a dermatologist readily available? And what makes us separate and different from others is that we're all concierge and white gloves. So you tell us when you're available, we get you connected. You're not wasting time waiting on a call or waiting on a specialist to get on the phone. You tell, nursing team, hey, I need to Vespicon Fluffy at 2 o'clock on Thursday. Y'all submit the information, give us all the records and such, and then our advisors already review it, and we'll jump on a call with you at that time and have a discussion about anything and everything, right? There's no limit to the conversation. All the advisors that I have with Vespicon are similar to me. We want to empower and educate our veterinarians. We know how difficult it is to juggle a strenuous day, have to think about all these diseases that we've learned in vet school and how to deliver that to our clients. As well as do what's right for the patient amongst people's financial constraints and all that. And Vespicon is set up to where, with a membership with us, you don't even need to charge the client. We actually recommend not charging the client because that sometimes is a barrier of people getting consults. Clients on a budget telling the doctor, no, I don't want to spend my money on it. Versus, you got a membership, you got unlimited consults, you could just consult away. Tell the owner or not that you talk to a specialist, but you'll deliver that specialist advised plan, and they already love you, and they're gonna do more with you because now you've got a plan of action. You know what needs to be done, and it's all done locally there. So, a lot of our members, we get a lot of feedback from them because not only has their confidence level increased, but their level of education has increased. So they've learned from that case, or if they couldn't implement it at that time, could implement it on the next time that a case similar to that came in. And then patient outcomes are amazing as far as, patients be arresting, getting recovered, having multiple comorbidities, but also having to have surgery that are like geriatric patients, but still thriving and living an additional 2 to 3 years because they have that kind of specialist support locally there and delivered by their veterinarian. So that's how Vespicon came. I mean, what we stand for, and we do a whole lot more too, providing CE at in person, virtually at various meetings and so forth. We do provide some teleradiology, telecardiology support. We also a concierge referral service. So when that case needs to be referred, we take care of that for you, so that's one less pain point you and your team have to do. But the thing that we do really well, and what is our kind of bread and butter, and why I built the company, is to give veterinarians a more personal access to multiple specialists, and just try to help elevate the level of veterinary access and veterinary care in the industry.
Yeah, you're doing it, my friend. You
Yeah.
really are. I'm looking on the website and I'm smiling because my gosh, I think I know almost all of these
Yeah.
specialists from speaking engagements and seeing them at shows. You got quite the list of fantastic colleagues that are there. And just talk about like the confidence level already. Like if I was just interested in it, I could confidently tell you, like, my gosh, you hit a home run with who you have on the as consultants. This is fantastic. And I we talk so much right now too, Doc, about access to care. And exactly to your point, like as much as maybe we want to refer our clients over, they can't either afford it. But now we work together and we partner together on trying to figure out like how we can get really good outcomes and build our confidence up, just like you were talking about. So I think this is fantastic that you have this service. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. The ultimate goal is just to kind of remove a lot of barriers that
Yeah.
are present within us, even as human beings. Like one of the biggest things is sometimes just saying, I don't know, I need to reach out and I'm gonna charge you, and to not have that conversation with the owner in the exam room while you're talking like they got bad liver disease. We got to get this figured out. Like if I don't have to talk
Yeah.
about that, but I can go talk and say, this is what's going on with the specialist. They can give me that feedback, and then I can come back to the owner and just say, I got it taken care of. This is how we're going to manage it. This is how we're going to do it. Like that is totally different levels of, practice, right?
Yeah.
So just being able to kind of provide that universally is the goal, right?
Does Vespicon stand for anything?
Yeah, thank you. So it is an acronym for Veterinary Specialty Consultants. There.
Okay.
So in trying to, establish the business, I was like, I need just one word that can be a noun and a verb, and it's got some meaning behind it. So
Yeah.
like, that's it.
It's good. It packs a punch.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Dr. Pierce, where can they learn more about Vespicon?
Yeah. So reach us at vespecon.com, VESPECON.com. On there, all of our team, our advisors, and I failed to mention earlier, we also have a business advisory arm as well, and you'll see them on there, where if you have business leadership issues, HR, social work, or just want business advice, you have access to that, and we're growing that out as well. But you can see everybody, all of our hospitals that we support, and all the ones that we're adding on, different groups and so forth. We market them as well because we are trying to be, that premier network for, the veterinary industry. So don't be afraid. If you're a new grad or a seasoned veterinarian, we all are in the business of learning and practicing veterinary medicine. So the more time that you do to invest in yourself and to learn, the better off you'll be, and the more productive you'll be, and the more
Well,
impact you'll have as well.
there's your mic drop moment right there. That's
Boom.
it. Better together. Absolutely.
For
Dr.
sure.
Kenneth Pierce, thank you so much for being on the Vet Blast podcast. Thank you for all the great work you do, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Adam. It's great chatting with you, and great seeing you again too.
Of course. Thank you, my friends. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Don't forget to rate the podcast because we're just getting this party started. We'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.